You're listening to Trek FM.
Hi, my name is Vaughn Armstrong. I've played more characters in the Star Trek universe than anybody, and I was Admiral Forrest. You are listening to Trek FM.
Maybe it's not the destination that matters. Maybe it's the journey.
Hello, everybody at home, and welcome. This is To The Journey.
To the journey!
I am your co-host, Tristan Riddell, and with me, as always, is the incomparable Charlene Schmidt. How are you doing?
Well, hello there. I'm doing fantastic. How about you?
I'm doing pretty good. You know what? I'm surviving. I'm surviving, Char, and I'll tell you why. Because I found out the other day that, you know, the world was just not ready for my writing talent. I think that's what it's come down to, and that's what I recognize. It's a fault in others, really, is what it is.
It's on them, not on you. You know, no good artist is appreciated in their time, as the adage says. So I think you're absolutely right, and I'm absolutely bummed that you did not win the Strange New Worlds contest, but it's like you said, the world just wasn't ready for this.
In all seriousness, I am looking, I say this with no bitterness, I am very much looking forward to reading the winners.
Me too.
I know that they got so many entries and they got so many people who were super excited about doing it. And so I cannot wait. And out of all of those people that submitted, these 10 are going to be published in the compilation. I mean, they got to be great. They got to be superb.
Oh, totally. I mean, this is an avenue for the winners, and I wish them nothing but success, because this is how authors like Dayton Ward became regular Trek novelists. If they really are up to the task and want to show off their talent even more and get that opportunity, their foot's in the door now, and I'm nothing but happy for them. Seriously, that's quite an achievement, and I can't wait to read the stories either. I want to know what ultimately beat you out. Sorry to put it that way. And I'm sure it's going to be a fantastic anthology of brand new Star Trek stories, and that's always a good thing.
That's always a good thing, because we want stories, whether they're published, whether they're on screen, the silver screen, the small screen, doesn't matter. We want Star Trek stories, and to get people from our own community to contribute to these stories, and in an official way, I mean, that's pretty awesome. And also, I made an announcement on the previous show. And I also made an announcement on Twitter, and I'm going to ask you to put something on Babel Conference. I talked about how I would like to collect as many entries as I can from you guys, from you listeners, who submitted something to the Strange New Worlds contest and didn't win. I want to create a directory for you on my website, thenerdparty.com. It's a podcasting website that's independent from Trek.fm that I founded with some very good podcasters and friends of mine. And I want to create a page where it's, I don't know, it'd be like the nerdparty.com/Star Trek Rejects or something. I don't know. You know, it's something to that effect. And it's like, you're going to see my entry on there. I've gotten 5 stories so far. I think something like
all
that.
Right.
5 people submitted. So I'm hoping to get a whole bunch more. And I want you guys to submit. You can email me at contact@thenerdparty.com. Again, that's contact@thenerdparty.com. Or you can find me on Twitter @TheInsaneRobin. I'm not going to make any money off of this. These are like, some people are confused. I'm not going to publish these. I'm not a publisher.
No books,
no paper. I am just posting them online. And I know that there are tons and tons of avenues to post fan fiction. I get that. I understand that some people have told me that. They're like, you realize that, right? You know that there are like fanfiction.
Yeah, you use the internet. Everything. You're aware. The idea is a one-stop shop to find as many as possible.
Just of Strange New World contestants. And I don't even care if it's from this year. It could be from previous years. Like, if you have a story that you submitted 5 years ago that didn't win, send it on my way at contact@thenerdparty.com.
Right on. That'll be
cool. Should be a lot of fun.
Yeah, totally. You'll have to let us know when the website is ready to launch and when we can read these babies.
Absolutely. I'm gonna wait a little bit longer before I start posting because I want to get a collection. I want to get a hearty collection of stories so it's not just like a handful, you know, that kind of
thing. Yeah, yeah. Oh, awesome. I look forward to that. Well, now that that whole saga has finally come to a close, we're going to bring another thing to a close today, and that is Essential Voyager.
This makes me shed a tear to my eye. You know, I just, I love this segment. This is one of my favorite segments that we've done onto the journey. And
it's
I'm sad
fun.
To see it go. Yeah.
Yeah. I can't believe we've already gone through every other season, except now we're going to tackle 7 and then it's going to be over. Aww.
I feel like we need to come up with a new concept, a new gimmick, a new category so that we can fill that Essential Trek shaped hole in our heart.
Well, you know something, we have gone through the seasons in a fairly numerous ways, and I have no doubt of our faith and ability to make that happen. We will find a way.
Life finds a way. Yeah. Okay, well, let's just, this usually takes us a while, so let's just go ahead and kick it in
here. Let's dive in.
So what's that first episode?
Well, we are going to pick up where we left off on season 6 and look at Unimatrix Zero, and this is part 2.
Assimilated by the Borg, Janeway, Torres, and Tuvok plot to release a virus into the Borg collective, which will allow members of Unimatrix Zero to retain their individuality in the real world and resist the Borg Queen. There's a lot of fancy words in that sentence, a lot of heavy concepts.
Indeed, there's a lot going on in the climax of this two-parter here. There is a lot of continuity in the Trek universe at large with First Contact and the Borg Queen. There's a lot of backstory for 7 of 9 and her relationship with Axum. And there's also that whole thing, oh, I don't know, where the captain and some other crew members get assimilated.
Yeah, it's and you know, this might sound a little weird. It's all going to be based on my phrasing here. They do not make good-looking Borgs.
They you read
are
my
heinous
mind.
Looking.
They're not very attractive as assimilated drones. None of them. Not Tuvok. Not B'Elanna. Not Janeway. Janeway clearly needs hair, and I would argue the same for B'Elanna. And then just Tuvok, I think, looks a little bit out of place.
Yeah, it's they look so greasy, and it's just so weird to see Janeway with no hair, like you said, and it's just it was just so weird because when you saw Locutus, you're like, whoa, you know, that's badass,
yeah.
That's cool, that's a good look. Now, obviously, the Borg have changed since the early 90s, but it's still for some reason it wasn't like, oh, they look cool or they look interesting. It's just kind of like, ugh. Yeah, that's your gut reaction.
Ugh, take it back. Make it
back. But I guess we should probably talk
selves.
About whether or not it's essential.
I suppose so. This isn't a rant about hair, I promise. Yes, I think it is essential because even though we don't learn, like, I don't know, this whole relationship with 7 of 9 is fairly inconsequential, but it is here and it is a part of her backstory. And we learn a little bit more about her place in the collective. That's kind of important. Plus, we did keep Unimatrix Zero part 1. Well, you do have to find out, I guess, kind of what happens. It's not very fair to exclude one part from the other. It's really not.
Yeah.
I know we've talked about that in the past, but in this instance, it wouldn't be right.
Nope. All right. Essential.
Okay. So we're keeping that. And then we go on to Imperfection.
Seven's life is put in danger when a crucial Borg implant malfunctions. I love this episode. I think this has a very nice collection of fine moments.
I, for whatever reason, did not know this. I did not know of your fondness for this episode.
Am I a hypocrite? Like, did we talk about this episode and did I trash it?
No, I don't think you've trashed it. It's just, I think maybe it's flown under the radar a little bit.
I think the reason why I like it so much is just because of the connection between Seven and Icheb. Like, this is the only episode where I actually like Icheb or can stomach Icheb is this one, because I like how selfless he is and how he forces everyone's hand, and he does the research and he figures out that his body can adapt, And Seven is just having none of it because she doesn't want to risk his life. And, you know, like, they're at a standstill where, like, you know, Ichip says, I'm going to refuse treatment. And Seven's like, well, I'm refusing treatment. And then the doctor's just super pissed. And he goes, he's like, well, somebody better use the damn thing because it's not going to be any good for anybody soon.
That's right. I love that.
Yeah, that's my favorite moment of the episode. So I think that that's what I really like it.
Yeah, but is it essential?
I think so. I think if we kept Ichab, we kept the Borg children episode, like the introduction.
We did. Yeah,
and
collective.
So, and this is probably the last crucial journey for Ichab. I feel like this is like,
yeah.
It doesn't really matter what happens to them to him after this, because this is his last hurrah, really, in Star Trek Voyager. And
it's certainly his biggest. I agree. This is Icheb's finest moment. And it's because he's actually given something interesting to do, and he's central to the main story.
Right. Right. And I'm, you know, like, obviously there's other episodes that involve him, you know, like the Q episode that's coming up. And, you know, like, he's heavily involved in certain things of that nature. But this one, I think, is the biggest character growth for him.
I agree. I would say for the Icheb aspect of it, yes, it is essential to keep.
Yes.
Actually get to know him and watch this episode. Okay. Well,
all
there's
right.
2 out of 2 so far. Next one up is Drive.
Tom Paris enters the new Delta Flyer in an interstellar starship race.
Ooh, we did not mention in Unimatrix Zero Part 2 that the Delta Flyer kind of got blown up.
Kinda, yeah, just a little bit.
Like blown to bits kind of thing, yeah. And here we have the Delta Flyer Mark II.
Whenever I see the Mark II, whenever I see it come back and they're just like, oh yeah, we built another one, it makes me think of that Robot Chicken episode, Star Wars episode, where Palpatine's on the phone with Vader and he finds out that the Death Star is blown up. And then he goes, he's like, do you know how much that thing cost? He's like, what? What is that? What is that? Just build another one? Really? That's your advice? Just build another one? And that is what I think of every single time that I see the Delta Flyer 2, because I'm just like, oh, they just built another one and it's exactly the same.
Yeah. Yeah. I kind of remember how it was a sort of a big deal that we had the first one to begin with.
Yeah.
And then, yeah, just all of a sudden, oh, we rebuilt it. It's cool. I guess they had enough practice now to where it was just second nature.
At least the new Defiant had the decency to change the color scheme inside.
Yeah, whereas this is just kind of a replica.
Now, okay, here's the thing. On the surface, this episode would be inconsequential. It's like, oh, they're in a race. This has nothing to do with them getting home. This isn't
right.
Any real big individual character development. But
yeah,
at the very end of the episode, what happens?
Well, there's this whole thing with Tom and B'Elanna. I don't know. You tell me. What happened?
They get hitched, and we don't even get to see the wedding.
Because we already saw a wedding in Course Oblivion. I guess they didn't have the budget or thought it would be overkill, and we don't actually get to see the real wedding. But yes, they get married. There's aside from the whole NASCAR in space thing that's happening, there's this whole aspect of Tom and B'Elanna and their relationship, and it goes through a lot in this episode. We've got to keep this one for that.
And we get the introduction of their cool flight uniforms.
Yes. Those are so pretty.
So those are awesome.
They
love those.
They are hot
things.
Stuff, man. Yeah, it's good. I love that. Okay, keeping it. Next one is Repression.
Tuvok investigates a series of assaults that are apparently targeted at the former Maquis aboard Voyager. You may say no. But.
Okay. But.
I feel like I can defend this one. And here.
Okay.
And here's,
go
here's
for
why.
It. Make your case.
When was the last time we actually heard the word Maquis?
Yeah, it's been probably at least a good couple, if not more, years.
And, yeah, it's like maybe when we. Like the Voyager conspiracy. I can't remember what season that was in.
That was last season. But how much. Well, yes, there was mention of Maquis because they made a big deal of Chakotay's tattoo. I am the Maquis officer. But that's not really taking to heart the whole Starfleet Maquis dynamic.
No, and I feel like this one kind of does because it evaluates how far they've come. And it evaluates the relationship between Janeway and Chakotay, where Janeway and Chakotay have that conversation. They're like, who would be doing this? We have grown past our differences. We're a family on this crew. What is going on? And yeah. I feel like that's part of the journey. You know, that is part of their journey, is yeah. overcoming the Maquis Starfleet obstacles. Now, could they have done it better during the show? Yes, of course.
Of course.
So let's grab whatever we can.
Yeah, yeah. But it is nice, though, that they at least acknowledge that, yes, this was a thing, and we allegedly have grown past it, as they mm-hmm. should have.
Yes.
So there
should they have done
that.
It after the first season? Maybe not. But by the seventh season, definitely.
Totally. Otherwise, you've got some problems. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And we've seen Voyager come together as a family. I'd say that was solidified in season 3.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So I feel like this is key to what's going on in the show.
Yeah, although I would argue that maybe it would be even better had they done a story like this a little earlier in maybe season 5.
Hmm.
But yeah, it's okay.
Maybe. Yeah, no, I'm not saying no. But I like how late it is because it's so out of the blue. But I think what you say, with what you're saying, like if it was in season 5, I think it would definitely add more credence to the, oh, somebody is harboring a grudge. You know, like somebody hasn't gotten over their prejudice.
Right. Maybe somebody slipped through the cracks.
Yeah, exactly. But in season 7, it's much more ridiculous where they know, okay, something's wrong. Something's weird. This is some sort of third party.
We already had Good Shepherd where we saw everybody who slipped through the cracks and that's now taken care of. And then there's still somebody? Really? How many people are hiding out on the lower decks of this ship?
Yeah, yeah, absolutely.
So,
well, there we go.
Yeah, okay, so I don't know. I'm 50-50 on this one. It's not my favorite episode. I mean, that's probably obvious by how I'm talking about it. But I don't hate it either. It just sort of is. And if you want to keep it, we can keep it. I'm not going to argue really any more for or against.
Well, I'm not saying it's a great episode.
No, it's definitely not.
Yeah, no, it's definitely not. But I think it's key to the development of the crew.
Okay, so we'll keep it for that reason. That's fine. All right, now the next one is Critical Care.
The Doctor's program is taken from Voyager, and he is put to work on a vast hospital ship where the twisted medical system is based on social status rather than medical condition.
I love how the synopsis uses the word twisted to describe the medical system, because this is our medical system in a nutshell. I mean, it's a great commentary of how screwed up things are in terms of access to healthcare in this country.
It was as subtle as a jackhammer.
I mean, it's definitely in your face. As long as you're halfway paying attention, you're going to get the message of this episode. And it is well done in that respect. I mean, it is good commentary. Is it essential, though? As much as I love this episode, I have to say no.
I don't actually like this episode.
Oh, you don't?
I don't. I'm bored to tears every time I watch it. This is so... Every single time we talk about Voyager onto the Journey, I forget this episode exists.
Oh, okay. I have a lot of episodes where that happens, but this isn't one of them.
This is hardcore one of them. Like, I could tell you maybe one moment from the episode, and that's about it.
Well, that's sad. I like this one, but that's okay.
So I say it's non-essential.
So we're going to strike it. Okay. It's all right. It doesn't break my heart too bad.
Okay, well, that's good.
It's a great social commentary, but it's not essential to Voyager. And the Doctor, he has so much character growth that at this point, this kind of experience is not changing him. There's going to be a lot more other things to consider down the road here. All right, Inside Man.
The Pathfinder Project makes contact with Voyager again. And this time they transmit a hologram of Reginald Barclay to interact with the crew. However, a certain group of aliens have seen a way to make a tidy profit.
Hmm.
They use the word profit. I wonder what race they're talking
about. Yeah. Context clue. Yes, indeed. I think this one is absolutely essential because of the whole continuity with the Pathfinder Project. Contacting home, that is entirely Voyager's arc of getting home and making contact with home and all of that lovely stuff.
Yeah, yeah. However you feel about this episode, it's essential for all the reasons that you just said. I mean, it's a part of the Pathfinder arc, and that we get four Pathfinder episodes. I think this is the third one, and I think it's great. We get Deanna Troi.
Yep, she's back.
We get Admiral Paris.
Yeah,
and it's absolutely essential because it's directly tied with them getting home or their communication with home.
Yeah, and I don't think it's an awful episode. I mean, I think season 7, I feel like there is a little more mediocrity in terms of overall quality. But that said, there are still a couple of standouts, one of which we are about to tackle, and that is Body and Soul.
When the Delta Flyer 2 is attacked, the Doctor must hide his program in Seven's Borg implants. Meanwhile, Tuvok undergoes the Ponfar.
Okay, there's two reasons right there why we should keep this one.
Why is that?
Well, one, Doc in Seven's body. Interesting character dynamics there. And then also, hey, it finally happened. Tuvok has to go through the Ponfar.
I feel like I could argue that this is unessential.
Really?
But I really do, because it doesn't really add to the character development. It doesn't really add to the story development or the journey of them getting home. But it is such a fun time. And it's so interesting to see how Tuvok deals with Ponfar and his solution. And it's so interesting to see Jerry Ryan tackle the Doctor's mannerisms and his attitude. I feel like this is kind of like Bride of Chaotica. Bride of Chaotica was not essential to the storyline whatsoever.
Right.
But it was essential to the fan experience, and I think that's where I'm coming from.
Okay. Yeah, I see where you're coming from. I entirely agree. You can't watch Voyager and skip this one. You do, you're really missing out on one of the most brilliant moments in all of Voyager history. So you gotta watch this one. You're right. It might not be absolutely essential, but there is, I think, enough here to keep it.
Yes, absolutely.
Okay.
All right.
Well, next one up is Nightingale.
When Harry Kim rescues a crippled alien starship, the grateful crew offers him command. I have probably seen this episode twice.
It's not one of my favorites either.
I should watch it today and see maybe if I've been misjudging it for years and years and years, basically for 16 years. This episode is so forgettable. It is so extreme in its mediocrity that it offends me.
Yeah, it's that good. I would say, based on the last viewing experience I had of this episode, which was not quite a year ago, I would say you are not missing out. It is a Harry Kim episode. It talks about him having command, learning a little bit about the rigors of command. And that, all of that said, you think that would be just brilliant potential, right? To develop Harry's character. I feel like we learn nothing in the end. Nothing good comes of it. And then it just is, show's over, and you're no better off than if you've never seen it before. So I think we can get rid of it.
Yeah, it just felt really out of character for Harry to me. I was just like, it was so audacious that he was started decorating his office, or like his ready room, or whatever you want to call it, on the ship, and Seven calls him out on it. He says, no, it's key to connect with one ship. I understand him getting a big head on his shoulder, but I don't think Harry would be inefficient.
It does make sense that it would be Harry, because we've seen him in command of the night shift before. This is a nice continuation of that. I'll give them
absolutely.
That.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
But to see Harry get a big head over the whole thing doesn't ring true to me.
No.
Because even though it seems like whenever Harry kind of tries to grow up hair, it seems really out of place. Like when in The Disease, he says to Janeway, have you ever been in love?
Yeah.
He just sounds like a bratty teenager trying, you don't understand. Well, no, she does. And Harry, again, this is just, okay, you're getting carried away, boy. Down. Get back down to your level here. And not that I want him to be beaten down and be an ensign forever. It's just, this isn't how I think the real Harry Kim would deal with it. So this isn't even in my canon, I think, is what I'm saying.
Nice.
This is not the Harry Kim I know and love. And I do love Harry Kim.
Yeah, I do too. I think he gets a bad rap, but this is why he gets a bad rap. The character is better than his writing.
Yeah, so there. Okay. Stricken. Next one is Flesh and Blood.
Voyager answers a distress call from a Hirogen outpost, only to find carnage caused by holographic technology that Captain Janeway had given them. Now, that right there in the description.
Yeah. Okay, do we really need to say more? This is a consequence of something that's happened before. This was at the very end of The Killing Game.
Yes.
Where Janeway gives the Hirogen holographic technology. This is a direct consequence of that. Absolutely, it's essential.
It is the third part of the Killing Game trilogy.
There you go. Okay, done and done. Let's go on to Shattered.
Woo. The macroviruses, Dr. Chaotica, and Seska hinder Chakotay and Janeway's attempt to restore Voyager to its normal state after a temporal distortion shifts sections of the ship into different time frames. We once described this episode as Shades of Grey done right.
Right. Well, it's the clip show. The non-clip show done right. Because it's the anti-clip show.
I like that. It's the anti-clip show. It is a way of doing a clip show without just showing clips. I love this episode. I think it's great. I think it's a nice walk down memory lane. And we get some nice moments between Chakotay and Janeway.
Well, of course there's that, and we can appreciate that. My thought, though, is it absolutely essential? You're going into past events, which we've relatively seen. I mean, there's some offshoots here, but more or less, these are things that we know. We go into a possible future, which may or may not happen. Is it essential? I don't know, but you should watch it because this is Voyager's greatest hits.
I feel like it's essential to the viewer. Maybe not necessarily, like, the same excuse that I gave for the previous one, where, like, this is essential to the viewer, but not necessarily the story, because I feel like this is essential to the overall experience of Voyager, because in the seventh season, we all knew this was going to be the last season of Voyager when it aired, and I do believe that it's important to look back on where you've come from, to figure out where you're going, and I think...
you got to come full circle.
I think this does a great job. And so this kind of wraps up their entire journey. It's just like, oh, wow. You know, we really have been through, you know, the macroviruses, Dr. Chaotica, Seska, you know. Yeah. And then Janeway says, you know, like, why should I continue this voyage? Why should I continue this journey? I should just turn around. And he convinces her not to. And I think that's key.
Yeah. Now, I wonder, though, in terms of our ranking, should this be an optional or should we make it required as a part of the official essential trek? We have had optionals in the past.
Yes. I do not think this is an optional one. I think this is essential. I really do. I think this is essential to the viewing experience because we all got burned with Shades of Grey and nobody likes a clip show. Nobody. And if you do, you're lying. Or you're lying to yourself or even worse, lying to me. And I think that this is a paragon of virtue when it comes to clip shows, and people need to see it.
Fair enough. I'm not going to argue against that. Because I am also a fan of this episode, I agree with your reasoning. I just wanted to play devil's advocate a little bit because ultimately, I suppose you could argue that the whole message of, hey, look how far we've come is essential to Voyager's storyline, but the events in and of itself, well, you could argue that. But no, let's not. Okay, besides, we already did.
We also get a future Naomi Wildman, who looks nothing like Scarlett Palmer's does today.
No, her hair is not nearly red enough.
Just like Wesley in the season one episode.
Yeah.
Like, holy crap, that does not look like Will Wheaton.
That was, that was kind of an insult to Will Wheaton. All right, let's go on to Lineage.
Torres discovers that she is pregnant and faces a private fear that she has had to deal with since her childhood. This is another no-brainer. Torres is pregnant, and we get more of her childhood.
The pregnancy thing sort of, I don't know, becomes fairly important throughout the rest of the show. We see it, we have stories dealing with it. Yes, you need to see this one.
You need to see it. Yeah, and it's a good episode. It's a great episode.
It is a great episode, absolutely. So, watch it. Next one, Repentance.
After Voyager rescues the crew of a severely damaged alien vessel carrying convicts to their executions, the crew begins to question the alien's legal system. This is the anti-death penalty episode.
It's also, I would say, in a more general sense, just a nice commentary on the justice system.
Justice.
It goes a little bit beyond just the death penalty.
That it does. That it does. I have mixed emotions about this episode. I feel like parts of it are really good. Parts of it are heavy-handed. But I think it's an overall good episode. But I'd be interested to think... I'd be interested to hear if you think it's essential. Because I don't really think it's essential.
My thought is that it is not essential. I don't know if there's anything in here that we need to take with us for the rest of what's left of the journey. I like the episode. I love watching it. I do like the message, the overall social commentary. It's taking on a very big and heated subject. And I feel like it handles it fairly well. It's worth watching, but is it essential to Voyager? No.
No. All right.
Okay, let's strike it. Ooh, next one is Prophecy.
Voyager becomes a battleground for the descendants of a group of Klingon zealots, some of whom believe that B'Elanna Torres' child is their savior.
Okay, we just talked about how B'Elanna's pregnancy was going to have some importance later on. This is one of the big ones.
This is one of the big ones, and I feel like even regardless of that, just the sheer fact that we see a D7 class cruiser in Voyager?
Yeah, in the Delta Quadrant?
How crazy is that? Yeah.
What? You gotta watch it and find out why.
Well, we usually say, like, if there's an Alpha Quadrant connection, we usually put it on our lists.
Well, that too. But on top of all that, this one is just so much fun. I love Klingons wreaking havoc on Voyager, especially where Neelix is concerned, because I won't spoil it if you haven't watched it. It's so much fun.
It's so much fun. It's so great. We definitely get a peek into Neelix's psyche just a little bit more.
Yes, yes.
It's a lot of
also,
fun.
Also, shout out to Larry Nemechek and his wife Janet because they pitched what ultimately became this story.
Oh, I did
and
not
And they have
that.
A writing
cool.
credit. Yes.
Very
so,
cool, very cool.
Yeah.
Well, kudos to them because this is a good episode.
Yeah, kudos to Dr. Trek. All right, next one is The Void.
Voyager becomes trapped in an empty region of space where other stranded starships prey on each other to survive.
No.
Yeah, no. It's
I don't
it's
have
a
much to
episode,
say about this
know?
One.
Yeah.
It's such a one-off.
This is a definition of a one-off, and I'm not saying it's bad, I'm not saying it's good, but this is by no means essential. Like, if you guys can think of any reason, I'd love to hear it, but I do not think it's essential.
Sorry, yeah, even I prepared notes on this. I can't think of anything, so sorry. Okay, then we go on to Workforce.
Most of the Voyager crew is kidnapped and forced to labor in a massive industrial workforce. You know my feelings on this episode.
Yes, I do. Now, one thing that got pointed out on the Babel conference from one of our longtime and very loyal listeners, Patrick Carlin, is that the ECH is a big part of this story. He is off running the ship when everybody else is kidnapped. Now, there's some growth there with the ECH. He's learning the more subtle sensibilities of command, as opposed to what we saw in Tinker, Tenor, Dr. Spy. Is that growth we need to have in Essential Trek?
I cannot be objective with this episode. I think this is such a wasted opportunity. To answer your question, no, I don't think so. I do not think the ECH, just seeing the ECH and having them learn more about the ship's programs, I mean, is worth it. I really don't. If you told me that, like, oh, you know, like, the doc is going to take, he's going to be the ECH and he's also going to become a tactical doctor where he goes and he has two machine guns that he just fires into a whole bunch of aliens. If you told me that was going to happen in this episode, but then explain to me what else was going to happen in the episode, I'd be like, I don't know. I don't know if it's worth it to watch the episode.
All right. Well, yeah, clearly you've said yourself you can't set aside your bias. And I'm sure everybody knows how I feel about this two-parter. I like it more than you. I love the idea, I think, more than anything, of what our characters would be doing if they weren't really themselves, if they were stripped away from Starfleet. Who are they at their core? Yes, it could be so much better done. We could get a lot more out of it than what we saw. Considering that there's really, I don't know, let's say if Jaffin had stayed aboard the ship, I'd say, yeah, it's essential. We have to know that.
Mm.
But it doesn't happen.
No.
There is also, I guess you could say, the whole Tom and B'Elanna thing, where even when Tom isn't himself, he still is there to be with and protect B'Elanna. That's great. That's a reaffirming message. But we already know that. That's not essential either. I'm at a loss here.
Yeah, that's the thing, is like we learn nothing new. It's that, you know, like B'Elanna's pregnant and Tom loves her regardless. We find out that 7 of 9 is like efficient and logical. And
no way.
We find out that Janeway is very good at her job because she's very smart. And, you know, like nothing is new, nothing is found, and nothing lasts.
Yeah, I just don't think there is anything there. So I'm sorry, Patrick. I know you made your case, but I think both of these are going to get stricken from essential Voyager canon.
And Patrick, that is the only reason why I would even consider it. Just so you know, that is the single reason why I would consider putting this into essential, but it just wasn't enough to trump it in my mind.
And let me tell you, that right there is a feat, because Tristan has expressed how much he dislikes this two-parter on many occasions, as you know. All right, well, let's move on to human error.
When Seven tries to perfect her social skills on the holodeck, her new emotions soon overwhelm her Borg implant. Meanwhile, Voyager accidentally wanders into an interstellar firing range. I never, ever remember the B-plot of this episode.
I don't either. All I remember is Chakotay and 7 of 9. Grrr. Speaking of bias.
Yes, I know it makes you angry, and I know it makes the world angry. It made me angry.
As it should.
But I felt like
I know what you're gonna say. And you're right.
Like, because it was just a simulation, I kind of made my peace with it. I was like, okay, that's weird. But I understand it. You know, he's a handsome man. He's a powerful figure. And she's clearly attracted to him. Should she have created somebody new? Yes.
Yeah. But she didn't. She made mistakes. And it was wrong.
Exactly. She didn't delete the wife. You know, like she picked somebody who...
Yeah. She could have taken a page from Janeway's book. Yeah. She could have gotten that love, like, lesson from Janeway, perhaps. But the truth of the matter is, this is here. And it does give some credence to things coming down the pipe.
That, and we get to see what's happening inside Seven's head. We get to see her experiment with romance, even if it's, you know, like in her own weird way, in her own private way. I mean, we see that there's this yearning to be more human.
Yeah. And we've talked about how Seven is essentially emotionally at the level of a teenager who's just barely learning the ins and outs of dating, courtship, relationships, all of that. This is a continuation of that. It is essential to her character and therefore essential to Voyager. And let's be honest, okay, if we were teenagers, would you not create holographic boyfriends and girlfriends to practice with before actually going out on a real date? Wouldn't you? Come on, be honest with me here, people. You all would. I know I would.
Moving on. Not answering.
Well, so we know the answer anyway.
With this one, I feel like, you know, if, you know, the emotional resonance of a teenager, the emotional growth of a teenager, if that's the case, which I agree with you, this is basically her in full-blown puberty.
What's happening to me?
Yeah, like, my body's changing, I'm having all these emotions. You know, like, yeah, that's just, like, that's basically what we're seeing happen to her. I mean, yeah, she was experimenting with dating in somebody to watch over me. But that was really just kind of exploring the idea of dating. You know, like we could do that in elementary school and middle school, where we're just like, oh, I like
it's
you.
It's true.
You know,
you want to go out with me? Yes or no? And then here, this is junior high or high school, where maybe you're falling in love with the first time, maybe.
Yeah, I'm thinking this is more. This is like her high school years. Someone to watch over me was like middle school.
Yeah, okay. Q2.
Q2. Facing his son's banishment from the Q continuum, Q leaves him on Voyager in the hopes that he will gain self-discipline. This is a part of the arc. This is a part of the Q arc. There's three.
It is. This is the trilogy. Is that alone enough reason to keep it as essential?
Absolutely. I think absolutely. Okay. This is a consequence of their actions in the previous episodes, where we see them, where we see Q try to save the Q continuum with Miss Q, and it, yeah. it you know, like, and then we see the result of the child saying, like, hey, I'm supposed to save an entire race of omnipotent beings. That's a lot of pressure. Now, is this a good episode? I think
it could be better.
It could be a lot better. And we rewrote this episode, and I loved how we rewrote it.
And that was also a long time ago. This was not even TTJ 100, was it not?
I honestly couldn't tell you, but I feel like it's essential because it ties into the previous two.
Yeah, I think I'm willing to keep it alone just for the Q arc. There are consequences here. Why not find out what happens? No, it is not the best conclusion, but that's not necessarily the point here. We've definitely kept episodes that were a little less than good because they tell something that you should know.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. So let's go on to author.
The Doctor completes work on a Holo novel that depicts the crew of Voyager in a rather unflattering roles as they abuse and scorn the emergency medical hologram. When the Holo novel is published without his permission, the issue of the Doctor's legal rights is brought into question. Seven reconnects with her aunt.
That's such a great sign. Oh, and by the way.
Yeah, BT dubs. Seven has something to do in here, too.
Fantastic.
This is the fourth episode of the Pathfinder arc that we talked about.
Yes.
With the previous one. And not only that, huge growth on the Doctor storyline of sentience,
yeah,
and individuality and respect and rights. Huge, huge.
Yes. Yeah, this is an absolutely essential episode for the Doctor. This is his Measure of a Man.
Yeah.
A very thinly veiled retelling of it, but explores the issue of holographic rights. He is not a typical hologram, so a good episode, even just on its merits alone, I think it's essential on that basis alone. Now, side note, I just want to interject. The rewrite we had of Q2 was episode 13. Can you believe that? And it's titled My Son the Amoeba. So go way back into the machine and dig up episode 13 if you want to hear our rewrite of that episode.
Yeah, I just today I listened to a part of our first episode, Worn Out VHS.
Really?
What the hell was wrong with my feed? I don't remember having like a crappy signal. Like, you and Lori sound fantastic, and I'm all degraded and weird and everything.
Really?
Yeah.
Your connection was bad or something? I don't remember that at all.
I don't remember either, because in the second episode onward, I sound fine.
Oh, that's so weird. I don't remember us having technical difficulties.
Yeah, I don't either. So weird.
Okay.
Doesn't matter. Anyway, just give me
all right.
Lane.
Author.
So, yeah, essential.
Okay, let's keep that easy enough. Friendship 1.
Starfleet Command sends Voyager on a special mission to retrieve a 21st century Earth probe, which is believed lost in the Delta Quadrant. Okay, here's the thing.
Jump right in, Tristan.
I know we constantly say that, like, if there's an Alpha Quadrant connection, we should throw it in because it's an Alpha Quadrant connection. They're talking back with home and blah, blah, blah,
yeah,
blah, blah, blah.
Yeah, Earth!
But this episode is so boring. It's so bad. It's not worth it.
Oh, I don't dislike it as much as you do. I like it. Is it essential, though? I'm leaning toward no.
I say 9.
All right. Well, just like Rammstein did, we will say 9 and
9.
Move on. That was such a great song. Okay. Natural law.
En route to a scientific conference on Leidos, Chakotay and Seven's shuttle is driven out of control by a force field layer over a wilderness area. Meanwhile, Paris gets a speeding ticket in the Delta Flyer and is sentenced to a 3-day safety course. This feels like season 8 of Voyager, the Twitter account.
Yes, I was thinking that, or it sounds like the plot for a sitcom. Meanwhile, yeah. Tom gets a speeding ticket. Yeah, all right, this is Chakotay and Seven on a planet together. Where has this happened before?
Yeah, yeah. And also, we see them destroy yet another shuttle.
Uh-huh. Good grief, Chakotay. He should get his license revoked. Forget Tom's speeding ticket.
I seriously would think, but, like, there needed to be a conversation between like a really, really boring conversation between the captain and Chakotay, where she says, you know, Chakotay, can you come to my office? And he comes and sits down, and she's like, listen, we don't think that we can let you drive anymore. We're running out of shuttles. We don't even know how we have this many left over. And it just seems to come back that, like, we've lost 15 shuttles. We only had 12, so I don't even know how that happened. And you lost over half of them.
You're solely on your own. Two-thirds of our losses, and so we just can't let this continue.
So we are taking the proverbial keys. I'm sorry, Chakotay. I'm sorry.
I love it. Yeah, I think that conversation had to have happened at some point, yes? Why did it not happen sooner? Like, maybe after, I don't know, what happened to the three strikes and you're out stuff?
Yeah, I don't...
Didn't make it to the 24th century, I guess. Okay, so are we saying that this is essential or isn't essential?
Unessential, yeah.
Not essential? Now, you could say that this does have something to do with the Chakotay and Seven relationship.
Does it?
Well, they're together.
They're together, but they don't really...
They got closer, I guess? Not
Did
really,
they?
No.
They were kind of annoyed with each other the entire time.
Well, they kind of were. Yeah, they were kind of bickering a little bit back and forth. But maybe that's what cemented their relationship.
It got them together. If it did, I didn't see it. I honestly don't see it, yeah.
Okay, let's just strike it because my bias is going to show here. I don't like this episode anyway.
Yeah, no, I don't either.
All right, Homestead.
Neelix is reunited with his people as he tries to save an imperiled Talaxian settlement.
Goodbye, Neelix!
And then he's gone! Neelix!
This is the point where all the fans, well, a lot of the fans, there were just some fans with no hope, but this is when a lot of people realized, oh my god, I'm gonna miss Neelix.
What really surprised me is that this was not the second to last episode.
It should have been.
Right?
Renaissance Man, we're gonna get to it, but what the hell?
This absolutely needed to be the second to last episode, because why would you have... Like, I remember when this aired, I was like, whoa, Neelix is gone? We're not going to see him again? And it's not the season finale next week? You know, finale next week is crazy.
Absolutely mental. Now, I don't remember. I might have to go to Memory Alpha and look this up, but I don't know if they shot this before Endgame, like if they threw Renaissance Man in as the next to last episode because of production issues or something. But yeah, this isn't right. That's what I'm really getting down to. This is not right.
Well, I mean, this was, according to the numbers on Memory Alpha, this was 166th of 168 episodes produced in Voyager and 166th of 168 released in Voyager with a production number of 269. And Renaissance is 270 and 167.
What the hell?
I know, it's so strange.
That is wrong.
So weird.
No, they screwed that up.
This is clearly essential to the Neelix character, clearly essential to the journey. They're losing their morale officer, their cook, their friend.
Yeah.
That scene at the end where, you know, like he's walking down the corridor and everybody's lined up is very reminiscent of when Worf left and then came back in the next episode.
Mm-hmm.
But and then we also
only
get to
here Neelix does not come back.
And Neelix gets, yeah, and that's, it has more resonance. Now, you know, obviously, you know, like,
yeah,
the Worf thing was in the middle of the show, but this, you know, this has more resonance because it's the end of the show. But, and
yeah,
we also get
so.
To see Neelix get Tuvok to dance.
Yes. Yes. I was just about to mention that he got as big of a send off as he possibly could have with that moment.
Yeah. He really could. So. Like, the only way it could have been bigger is if he died like Damar in Deep Space Nine.
Yeah, but since this is the near end of season 7 here, we knew that he was leaving for realsies and he's gonna go live with his lady.
Which is, it was such an interesting turn because I was always so excited to see how Neelix interacted with the Alpha Quadrant. You know, like how he, think about how many novels or comic books that could have been made about Neelix adjusting to life on Earth.
Come on. That is a comedy spin-off series right there.
Then we could see him with his own restaurant, or even better yet, he could hook up with Joe Sisko, and he could run Sisko's.
Oh my god! Would that not be a trip right there?
How cool would that be?
That is a comedy spinoff series right there.
Oh my gosh, people, get on this. Content creators, let's do this.
That would be, in an alternate universe, this happened. Now, I kind of do see, though, why the writers did this, because I think we were all expecting Neelix to come to the Alpha Quadrant and have all sorts of adventures. It was predictable, and this was not. And, okay, I get it, but yeah, how much fun would it have been to have had Neelix partying it up on Earth?
It's a definite surprise, and I applaud them for doing it because it was unexpected. Not necessarily what I wanted, but I applaud them for how they executed it.
Yeah, yeah. Overall, it was a very good and dignified send-off for Neelix.
Yes, yes.
Okay, so, Renaissance Man.
The Doctor must become a master of disguise to save Captain Janeway. This episode is more fun than it is essential.
I don't even know if it's that fun.
Really? You don't like it?
I'm not a big fan. No. I don't get much out of this. It's not something that I really, like, when I'm rewatching Voyager, I think of this episode and just think, oh boy, I can't wait. No, it's just more, okay. Like, as a next to last episode, this just does not get me going at all.
I kind of like this episode. I think it's fun. I like the Doctor running around and pretending to be B'Elanna. I think it just made me roll around on the floor because I was laughing so hard when she says, like, you're going to give fried chicken to a pregnant woman? And
okay, yeah, that's a great moment, but it's not essential.
No, that's what I'm saying is that, I like it. I think it's fun, but I have nothing to defend it for it being essential.
Yeah. Okay. Well, let's strike it then and delve into Endgame.
Years after Voyager's return to the Alpha Quadrant, Admiral Catherine Janeway resolves to alter the past in order to help her crew get home sooner.
I think this is kind of a no-brainer. This is the last episode. Well, the last two episodes. It's part one and two. So this is how the show ends. You gotta keep it. Like it or not.
They get home.
It's spoiler alert.
The end of the show. Yeah. Oh, spoiler alert. Ooh, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. It's kind of important to know how it all wraps up. And it does.
And it does. May 23rd, 2001.
Oh, it was a sad day.
I remember it distinctly. Like, I remember, like, because I they aired it kind of late, if I remember correctly, or it felt like it aired late.
Oh, really?
Because it was a two-parter. Maybe it was just because I was in the central time zone. I think it might have started at 9 that night.
Okay. See, I didn't get UPN, and so we got it on a weird time slot anyway.
Oh, okay. Okay. Yeah, I think where I was, however that affects things, I think it aired at 9, and since this was a double episode, I went to bed at 11, and it was a school night, and I remember staying up with my mom. And it was the opposite of the end of the Truman Show, where those two security officers are like, oh, okay, let's see what else is on. It was very much, what are we supposed to do now? You know, like as I'm like trudging off to bed.
Oh my gosh. Yeah, that whole feeling when a TV show is over and you've invested so much time and sometimes years of your life following characters, it's like, now what? It's such an empty feeling. Or when you finish a book, kind of the same thing. It just... okay, now I gotta find the next best thing because this is over. That ain't right.
It's rough, and I remember the mystery and the what? Like when they opened up and the fireworks are above San Francisco. And
then I know, it's like, you're really shortchanging us on this? Really? Really?
And then the announcer says, like, it's the 7th anniversary from the Voyager's 23-year journey in the Delta Quadrant. Like, I just remember going, what is happening? Like, what is going on? Did we miss an episode?
Well, I remember hearing that narration, because at first I thought maybe we got really ripped off. Like, we didn't see the moment where they actually got home. We just see the fireworks. And then they're going to talk about what happens afterward. And I'm like, okay, well, that might be okay. And then they talk about, oh, this was such and such a time. I'm like, oh, okay, this is what's happening. All right, I'm willing to go along with this. Okay, yes. Okay. But I had that moment, too, of, whoa now, what is going on? Because it was a bit of a shocker of an opener. Like, 7 years and you're just going to skip this whole thing? Really? How dare you?
You know how there was we've talked about how some of the Memory Alpha articles can be a little overdramatic? Or
yes.
Like a little bit more detailed. I think the same person who wrote that last one that we talked about wrote this one. Because listen to this.
Okay, please, dramatic reading time. I love this.
All right, here we go.
Fireworks light up the San Francisco night. The long-lost Federation starship USS Voyager, now returned from its 23 years of travel in the Delta Quadrant, buzzes the Golden Gate Bridge, spanning San Francisco Bay, then climbs and twirls like a dancer among the fireworks, huge, watching crowds cheer.
Wow, is that from the novelization or what?
I know, right?
Wow! That's beautiful. It's a beautiful description, but... Okay, it's not a book. It's Memory Alpha?
It's Memory Alpha, guys. I mean, that's the thing. Is that I'm not making fun of this person whatsoever, because bravo to you for being able to write so well, but why would you put that effort towards a Memory Alpha page?
Yeah, seriously, write some short stories or books or something, because that's great. Keep going. Write some fanfic. I want to read more. Yeah, oh, that's great. We should do more dramatic readings. Because those are fun. Yeah. Okay.
All right. Well, that's it, folks. That's season 7 essential. That's let's tally up the numbers for season 7, and now we can give you a series over. We can give you a series overview of all of this.
All right. So I've broken it down. Here is what we've got. Counting Endgame as two parts, we have kept 16 out of 26 episodes in season 7. Which is, if you round up, 62% of season 7. So that's quite a lot more, actually, than I was anticipating. I don't know about you.
Should we count Endgame in two parts? Because it aired as one.
It did, but in production, they counted as two.
What do we do for Dark Frontier?
We counted it as one. And I think they listed it in production as one for that. Because that's, I don't know. Because they didn't divide that into two until they had to for syndication.
Okay, so I see what you're saying, where they aired it as one, but they produced it as one, and Endgame was aired as one, but produced as two.
Correct. So that's how I did that. Now, that leads to a series total, percentage-wise, of keeping 59% of all episodes. We kept 102 out of 172 episodes, not counting optionals.
Hey, that ain't half bad.
Yeah, it's almost 2 out of 3, and that ain't bad.
I'll take it. Yeah.
In the words of Meatloaf.
Because this isn't the number of what's good in Voyager. This isn't like 100 and whatever good episodes out of 168. It's what we deem essential to the storyline.
Right. Yeah, so, to say that Voyager has no continuity, Voyager has absolutely no growth, there's absolutely nothing to it, you're wrong. I think that's kind of what this ultimately shows, is there's a lot more threads that go through the show in and out than meets the eye. Is it as intricate as shows being produced today, things like Better Call Saul, House of Cards, a lot of the serialized dramas that we love and we've talked about before? No. But there's more here, especially for an episodic show, than meets the eye, definitely.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
So that is not bad. Not bad at all, Voyager. All right. Well, Essential Voyager isn't the only thing we've been talking about on Trek FM this week. Here's a glimpse at what else is going on the network.
Previously on Trek.fm, Women at Warp.
The only way that she can get through the trauma is remembering what her real story is, and that's getting this puppy home and taking care of it.
I wish that Captain Jeremy Nelson said, "Let's get this puppy home."
Melodic Treks.
Do you know what lesson I got from this?
What?
Don't rely on technology to solve all of your problems.
What does that mean?
It means don't play on your iPad all the time.
That's what my teacher told me.
Your teacher's very smart.
Saturday Morning Trek.
Dorothy had a little bit of a fit with the animators. They had said over and over again, there is no moon in the Vulcan sky.
I think it was like the first episode that aired of the original series when they mentioned this, because Uhura walks up to Spock and she's like, "Tell me I'm beautiful. Tell me that I would look good in your moon." And he's like, "Vulcan has no moon." Correct. I'm not surprised.
Continuing mission.
So why don't you give me a little bit of a thumbnail of what Starship Grissom is?
First, it's a Star Trek fan film. It's written by teachers and designed so teachers and educators can download it and use it in their classrooms.
And that's what else is happening on Trek.fm.
So all of our shows, we have to mention, are fueled through the fine folks who are monthly subscribers to us on Patreon. Go to patreon.com/trekfm. Consider becoming a monthly subscriber. It is because of listeners like you, to steal a line from PBS, that we keep this network afloat. It pays for the distribution, the bandwidth, all the storage, the terabytes upon terabytes that we use now to broadcast all of this stuff. So we appreciate everybody's help, but especially the help of our associate producers. Those fine folks are Dante Hopkins, Jamie Deuce, Bruce Lish, Aaron Harvey, and Kenneth Tripp. Thank you guys for being associate producers of TTJ. Now, if you don't have any money burning a hole in your pocket, I understand. There's still a way you can help us, and that's by writing a review on iTunes. And guess what? We have people to thank. They have written us reviews in the US iTunes store, and they have given us all 5 stars. So these awesome people are Red Rose of Texas. Great name.
Great name.
Yeah. Also, Sivan S of 9. Nice spin on that. And Noel Dem. Thank you all very much for leaving us a review, giving us 5 stars, singing our praises, and helping us out. We really do appreciate it so very much.
Now, I want to say something to Noel Dem about his review. I appreciate you giving us a 5-star review, but he said that he was disappointed that we hadn't thought of anything for Seska in our JJ-verse reboot of Voyager.
Mm.
Now, I want to say something to you, Noel Dem. There is plenty more to talk about in the JJ-verse of Voyager.
Just because we haven't. Totally.
Yeah, just because we didn't get to Seska in the initial episode doesn't mean we're not going to get to her later on. So you
that's
hang
not
in
to say
tight.
We won't. Yeah.
Yeah, hang in tight, good buddy, because that could very much happen.
Oh, absolutely. She was such an important part of the first couple of seasons. I think inevitably her name would come up. And should we continue the JJ verse, which we very likely will, stay tuned. We might address it. All right. So Essential Trek, it's done. We've gone through it. It's over. We're going to have to find something else. And next week, what is that something else going to be?
Next week, what we're doing is we're giving a general topic of what effect did Voyager have on the Star Trek fandom? Every single show, whether it's TOS, TNG, DS9, or Enterprise, Voyager included, have all had a dramatic effect on the fandom, how we've reacted to it, how much we love it, how much we hate it, how much we were disappointed, how much we obsess over it. All of these things have unique effects. Every single show does. And that is what we're going to talk about next week, is how Voyager affected us as fans and how it affected non-fans. But you'll have to tune in next week to find out. So until then, this has been To the Journey.
To the Journey!